This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, good Friday to you. Thanks for joining us. It is Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio. All right, coming up, we'll get to the NBA playoffs last night, two games in the books. We'll also talk about the college football playoff expansion, the committee proposing 12 teams, not four. Not eight either, and not six. 12 teams could be competing for the national championship in college football. We're going to start with the NBA playoffs because last night I had a feeling like I could turn the channel on to NBC and watch Friends or maybe a little ER or crank up the Sega Genesis or maybe watch CNN to see what the Clintons were doing in the White House, because it certainly felt like the 1990s last night. 86-83? And it came with Giannis Antetokounmpo and Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and Chris Middleton, teams that will regularly go for 120 without blinking an eye. Last night, an 86-83 game. That is 90s NBA basketball completely. That is what you used to get during the Bulls era when they would beat Utah like 81-77. But is it enough? That's the big question. Milwaukee got their win. They needed it. They got blown out in game two in a game they didn't show up at all and didn't take an opportunity that was presented to themselves without James Harden on the court. Last night, James Harden didn't play again. But this time, Milwaukee did win the game. They did drag it out. It was ugly, but is it enough? That's the big question. Is that the kind of game that Milwaukee can play the rest of the way? Can Milwaukee get in a game that is 125-124? Can they beat Brooklyn in those kind of games? Because to think that Brooklyn will play a game like that again, well, then you must be looking ahead to the future, because I don't see it. Utah is up 2-0 in their series against the Clippers, had a 21-point lead, lost that lead, regained that lead, and now lead 2-0. But as the old saying goes, a series is not a series until the home team loses, and so far the home team has not lost in that series. Home team hasn't lost in the other series either. So we'll talk about both of those. We'll also get your thoughts on the 12-team college football playoff proposal. Is this a good idea? Is this something that we want as college football fans? It's all coming up on the Friday edition. Again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. We continue. It is Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue along. It is Wake Up Call. Hit us up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. So the NBA playoffs continuing tonight. The Philadelphia 76ers and the Atlanta Hawks go at it, and the Denver Nuggets and the Phoenix Suns. Speaking of Colorado, the Avalanche were ousted last night in the postseason. Vegas, baby, back in the Western Conference Finals. Isn't that great? But they've had a very successful run. It wasn't that long ago that they came into existence, and they're already in the Western Conference Finals again. They competed for the Cup like their first year of existence.
Yeah. Aren't they only 3 years old?
Yeah.
Something like that?
They lost to Washington. So Washington won it in 2018.
Yeah.
So that was their first year in the league.
3 years old.
Yeah. God bless them. Vegas fans are now spoiled. They probably think this should happen all the time.
This is what happens when you go to Vegas.
Exactly. They'll be playing Montreal in the Western Conference. I don't even know if it's called Western or Eastern Conference Finals now, because they had to mess up everybody's geography.
Yeah, isn't there also the division? North?
Is that what it is?
I don't know.
Back when I was a kid, they used to be like the Campbell Conference and the Adams Division and the
Norris
Division. Remember that? They would have names, and then they changed that, which I thought was stupid because I thought it was unique and cool.
Yeah, they're just trying to be like everyone else to get attention. Yeah,
exactly.
But for Vegas fans, they're penciling in the Raiders in the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
because that's
right,
just what you do.
That's just what you do Exactly.
And when the A's finally get there, World Series time.
Exactly. There'll be A's back in the World Series.
Yeah, who doesn't want baseball in Vegas in the fall?
You're right. Yeah, who doesn't? No kidding. It's crazy. You know, it's funny with these divisions, because I know I've said this before. You know, as a kid growing up, I thought Atlanta was out west because the Falcons and the Braves play in the Western divisions. But this is the problem when you have these things, is because owners like to move teams, and then it forces the people to go, yeah, I get it. They're not in the Northwest anymore. I know. We'll work it out later. You know, they allow these owners to, like, move the team to another location, but they stay in these geographical divisions that don't make sense, and then the league has to go, okay.
I mean, I think, going back to your point, I think that's why hockey changed their names, because all the teams, like, left Canada.
Yeah, they were all moving around.
All these teams were popping up all over the place. But it would be a lot easier if they just kept them there.
Right.
Because then you don't have to say, oh, why is Atlanta in the West and not in the, you know, when they're on the East Coast? But if they're in the, you know, Clemente division, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Remember when the Arizona Cardinals were in the NFC East? Because they used to be the St. Louis Cardinals, and they were just in that five-team division, and then they were playing. It's just like, okay,
if you really
fine, we'll move them around.
Really think about it. I mean, it still doesn't make sense that Dallas is in the NFC East.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I mean, you should, in theory, swap Dallas with Carolina.
Should the NFL change those to name them after famous football players?
Of course.
Of that era, right?
A butt kiss.
Like, if you had the AFC East, would you could name it like the Shula Division or something like that, where you find some prominent person
out of those teams.
Teams that's retired. That's, you know.
Put it to a fan vote. Would you rather
Would
you rather have Shula Division or Namath Division?
Yeah, true, right? And something like along those lines, right? And then later, you know, move it to something else. I don't know, but there you go. That's the NHL Stanley Cup. The Avalanche, by the way, I know I'm not a huge hockey guy. The Avalanche, though, I did follow. They were great this season. They won the President's Cup, but the President's Cup doesn't always equal the Cup. Very few teams have won both. I think a handful, if that. But they were really good. This was an all-in season for Colorado. They had everything working for them. They had the right goaltender, right young talent. They were fast, and Vegas eliminated them in six games. Avalanche scored seven goals against them in game one, and then Vegas figured out a way to slow that team down and then won that series in six. So that's interesting. And they got Tampa Bay against the Islanders in the other series. The Tampa Bay Lightning are the defending Stanley Cup champions. There you go. Look, it's hockey talk on Wake Up Call. So
we're done.
The Islanders beat Boston. Yesterday, in the series. That was kind of heartbreaking.
Yeah, I heard a little bit about that yesterday.
I'm sure you did.
I will say this. The announcer, the play-by-play guy for the Islanders is fantastic.
Is he good?
Yeah, let me find a clip for you because you have you'll love him.
Is he like, what makes him good? Does he have funny names like Mike Lang for the Pittsburgh Penguins?
No. I don't know. I need to find his name, too. No, it's just his radio calls are next level.
Well, you can't just say that. What makes it next level? Like, that's what I'm asking. Like, what does he do?
He must drink a lot of tea and honey.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I mean, it's the only thing that I could think of. Let's see.
All right, I can't wait to hear it because this has been a very vague explanation as to why he's awesome.
Here we go. All right. This is their final call the other night.
10 seconds to go. Bruins have it behind the Islander net. New York Saints is the chant by this Islander crowd. Letty on the far side off the glass. 5 seconds to go. Bruins hold it in behind the New York net with three. Richie on it. Bruins out. And the New York Islanders defeat the Boston Bruins by the final score of 6-2. The series is over. They eliminate Boston in six, and they will head to the Stanley Cup semifinals for a second straight year, where they'll meet the Tampa Bay Lightning once again.
That's not next level. He sounds like a high school kid. He sounds like a young man.
All right, he sounds like a high school kid, but, I mean, he does this all the time. Like, believe me, I've heard enough of these where, especially when a goal comes, his voice just goes up like 30 octaves.
Yeah.
And it must, I mean, he has to have tea sitting there at the ready every single time because that voice has got to be sore by the end of a season.
Well, yes, but his natural voice isn't deep
then goes to high. His regular voice is high. It just goes to higher.
That's true.
So if you have a baritone voice and then you screech, you're more likely to ruin your vocal cords. If you have a higher tendency voice, higher tinging voice, and you go up a next octave, it's not as bad. So he was very smooth with the play, but that's what you expect at the highest level of hockey. But yeah, he sounded really good.
No, he is
not Bob Wilson of the Bruins or Mike Lang of the Penguins.
Okay, fine.
But he's pretty decent. That's pretty good. So yeah, congratulations to the Islanders. Hockey's. Yeah. I called hockey for the Air Force team. I called hockey in college at University of New Hampshire, and then I called hockey for Air Force. It is a really hard sport to call. Really difficult.
I don't know how they do it.
It was easier than I thought in terms of the preparation, because you get a line sheet at the top level. You get a line sheet. So these are the guys that are in line one, line two, line three. So if one's on the ice, the other two are on the ice. So if you see a line change,
you got an advantage there.
Yeah. So if you see a line change, you just drop down to the line that's coming out of the ice. And then, you know, who's on the ice. But it is the location of the puck, and what makes like Mike Emmerich so good is the vocabulary. You have a tendency to say the same thing over and over again in calling a hockey game, because it's very hard to expand the vocabulary that quickly as to what the puck does. So as you're describing the play, you tend to use the same verbiage over and over again. Basketball is a little easier because there's different ways. The ball can be bounced past. It can be high passed. It can be spun out. It can be bulleted. There's a whole bunch of different ways you can describe it. But hockey, the good ones can really expand their vocabulary as to what exactly the player is doing it. You know, shuttles off the puck, slams the puck against the boards, ricochets off the end line, rebounds off the corner, those kind of things. Those are what makes a really good play-by-play announcer.
To me, the most amazing thing is that, you know, how accurately they're getting the players' names.
Right.
I mean, even though they know the lines, those players aren't in the same position on that line. They're shifting all over the place, and blows my mind.
You got to know the location of where they're at. If they're in the back, they're, you know, back line defense. If they're front line defense, yeah, it's kind of complicated. The good ones, it takes a lot of practice. All right, college football playoff. Is this a good idea for 12 teams? We'll discuss next.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, trade up any non-contact thermometer for a $5 rebate towards an Exergen purchased at any retailer. Accuracy matters more than ever when taking temperature. Published research shows non-contact models miss 5 out of 6 fevers. Upgrade to Exergen, the only home forehead thermometer proven accurate by published peer-reviewed clinical studies. Details at Exergen.com. College football could be going to a 12-team playoff as soon as 2023. All right, now this is still needs some work. It still needs to iron out some issues. But this is basically how this came about. There was a committee that came together to research and determine how the college football playoff could be expanded, right? There was just it was almost like a search committee that came together. It's like, yeah, we're thinking about expanding. What could it look like? How could we do it? So that group is now presenting a proposal to commissioners at a conference next week in Chicago, where they will suggest that the best way to do this would be 12 teams. And the proposal includes 6 conference champions, the top 6 conference champions across college football in Division 1A. Then 6 at-large teams that will then be picked. So you get 12, and then there'll be 4 teams, all conference champions. They will get a bye week. They will play in bowl games. The first round games will be on campus, and then off we go. Right? Then we'll get this together. This has been a really interesting couple of years for college football. And you don't have to be that old to go back to a time where college football playoff was just a dirty word. Nobody wanted to talk about it. Nobody wanted to address it. Fans clamored for it, but it was always shot down. And it was shot down for the protection of the bowl games. The bowl games mattered. The bowl games were important. The bowl games were a lot of money, and nobody wanted to mess with them. Nobody wanted to mess with the tradition of them, and nobody wanted to mess with the economic influence that these bowl games had. So then they created a plus one kind of thing, or they created like a national championship game, because they knew the fans were getting tired of, well, these teams are playing in the Rose Bowl, and these teams are playing in the Orange Bowl, and these teams are playing in the Sugar Bowl, and then after all the bowls are done, these voters are going to vote who won the national championship. Instead, they said, all right, you know, here's what we're going to do. We'll have one and two play. How's that? Does that work out for everybody? So they did. They started having the national championship game one and two. They still had the bowls, but if you were part of the 1-2 process, you got to play in this game. Well, this wasn't really a playoff, but it was at least a national championship game where it was decided on the field. And then college football thought they were good with that. They thought that's what you guys wanted, right? That you didn't want voters determining who won the national championship. Instead, you wanted a game on the field to determine it all. They had to use a computer to get there, but what, who cares? And then they started talking about, all right, this is not good enough. People don't like the computer. They don't like the Harris poll either. So what are we going to do? All right, we'll give you a playoff. Four games. Is that going to make you happy? Four teams. We'll have a committee. We'll have them put together a list of teams, give them the top 25 rankings. But at the end of this thing, they'll give you the four best teams in college football. We'll put them in semifinal games. We'll put the winner of those games in a championship game. There. Done? You satisfied? Are you happy? We never wanted to do this to begin with. Now we're giving you four teams. Take it. Run with it. Be happy. But people then started saying, well, it doesn't seem really fair, though, to these other schools and these other conferences. Sometimes there's a good team in this conference. They don't get in. And what about a team that doesn't play in a big-time conference like UCF? Shouldn't they have a chance to compete for a national championship? And now it looks like college football went, oh, you know what? We were kidding this whole time. We really wanted a huge playoff. We're going to get this thing into 12. We're going to have a whole bunch of teams from different conferences playing. Heck, you could get some non-Power 5 conference teams in this bad boy. Well, this is going to be a blast. We'll be playing games all across the country almost the entire month of January. Yeah, you know what? We were just kidding about this, all of this all along. How do you go as an entity from, we're not even going to talk about playoffs, you're crazy, to getting a 12-team playoff within a span of 12, 15 years? How does that happen? Well, it happens because there's money, and this happens because times do change and thought processes change, and people are really upset about the way systems work, and they have a little bit of authority and a little bit of power to change that. Now, look. College football prided itself on the one thing no other sport could give you in America. Very, very, very valuable regular season games. Very valuable. Those magical Saturday nights when you would watch some team go into Tuscaloosa or some team go into Gainesville or Happy Valley or Stanford or Texas and pull off an upset, and you'd pull back and go, whoa! What does this mean now? Holy cow, chaos is coming. They prided themselves on that. They loved that. They wanted those games to matter more than anything, and they wanted you to sweat every single Saturday. I remember my first real taste of college football when I was a freshman at the University of South Carolina. I had grown up in New Hampshire. College football wasn't really a big deal there. Doug Flutie was probably the closest thing we ever had to some sort of connection to big-time college football. So my first game is South Carolina against Duke. And Steve Spurrier is the head coach at Duke, which is really cool. South Carolina wins the game. Everyone's excited. They looked really good doing it. Had a senior quarterback, looked really good doing it. Harold Green was the running back, who would later play for the Eagles. Next game, it's a tie. It's a tie. And I remember the crowd kind of being upset about it. And I remember one lady looking up at her boyfriend or husband, whoever it was, and said, well, there goes the national championship. And that was my first real taste, because back then you had to finish like pretty much unbeaten to play for a national championship because you had to go through your season and then the bowl, win the bowl, and convince the voters. And a tie to, I think, Georgia Tech at the time was not going to do it. Now look at college football. College football is going to have 12 teams if this passes, that'll compete for a national championship. You can lose twice. And if you're still good enough, if you still have enough really good wins, if you're still competing for your conference championship, you'll compete for a national title. Now, on the one hand, that's good because everyone should be allowed to screw up. Everyone should be allowed to have a game on the road at Beaver Stadium or the Horseshoe or Ann Arbor or wherever it is and lose. If you go up north and you're Georgia and you lose, it shouldn't derail your entire season. Likewise, if you're willing to go play a game at Alabama and you lose, you shouldn't have your season derailed. On the one hand, that's good. And if you lose by a field goal in a highly contested 3-6 game, you shouldn't have your season derailed. I get it.
Now, here's another thought that I'm having, and I don't know which way it'll go. If it does go to 12 teams, will the non-conference games get better or worse?
They'll get better.
You think so?
I think they'll get better. Yeah, because I think... Because
I can see it on the flip side, too, that, hey, you know what? All we got to do is finish in the top 12. We don't need to front-load our schedule.
Be careful. Be careful, because this committee is still determining this outside of the conference champions, right? So you're up against 6 teams. And here's the thing. The committee has always, since its inception, always demanded that you play people. That if you load up with cupcakes outside your conference schedule, they'll punish you for it. I think it will improve games because I think let's say you're Georgia, and you know your SEC schedule is tough, really tough. Florida's really good. Tennessee may be getting better in your own division. Maybe your out of division game that year is Auburn. That's one of the oldest rivalries in college football. Maybe you got to play a really good Texas A&M team too. If you know that is good, you need some meat on the non-conference schedule because you probably anticipate that you'll drop a game or two during the regular season, right? So if you can go to Penn State and win early in the season, or you can go to Ohio State and win, or some other place where you can pick up a game, or like maybe Minnesota, or maybe you go out west and play USC or something like that, or maybe it's a neutral site game against Wisconsin. That'll carry some weight if you can win that game, and then you can afford to lose a tightly contested SEC matchup. I'll tell you this. Alabama is playing Oklahoma State in a couple of years. Alabama's done a very, very good job of going after some good competition on their schedule in future years. I think that will be rewarded by teams being able to do that because, I mean, 2 losses now you should be right in the picture of this thing. And 3... if you are really good, if you have maybe an upset win on your calendar, maybe 3. I think there's a problem here, though. I do. And I think I think 12 teams is too many. I think there's a couple of problems here. I think one of the problems is this. The NCAA basketball tournament is really fun. It is 68 teams. It's really fun. It can be wrapped up in 3 weeks. We play 2 games in a weekend. It can be wrapped up in 3 weeks. And let's be honest, it's not the 68 best teams in college basketball, right? There's a certain level of criteria that gets you into the tournament. You can stink all year, win your conference tournament, and get in. It's never about taking the 68 best teams and putting them in a tournament. It is rewarding teams for a season. It is rewarding teams for playing in the conference tournament well, all of those things. But in a blink of an eye, in one quick weekend, we go from 68 teams with the play-in games earlier in that week to 16. We eliminate a lot of basketball teams. And if there's some upsets, there's some upsets. But we get down to 16 really quickly, really fast. This is 12 teams over a month of college playoffs? A month? And that's a long time. That is a lot of additional games to play on the college football schedule. You're talking 13 already in the SEC if you play in the conference championship. You might be asking to play 3 more, 4 more en route to winning a national championship. That's a lot of games. I mean, I don't know. In all the talk about limiting exposure and limit, I don't know how they sell this to as far as a safety angle. Maybe they don't want to. They maybe don't care. But it's that's a lot of football games to be played. But there's one other one that I think needs to be addressed, and we'll talk about that coming up. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's. Is this a good idea? Before you say yeah, because bigger is better, tell me why it's a good idea without just, yeah, more teams. Give me a reason. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's, as we continue with Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. You need a mortgage that fits your life, Rocket can. I think a lot of this college football expansion has just everything to do with opportunity. I do not think you're going to see a whole bunch of different national champions because we've expanded the playoff. I don't think this is a situation where a bunch of schools on the outside looking in have said, give us an opportunity and we will take you down, Alabama. We will take you down, Ohio State. We will take you down, Clemson. I don't think it's that. I think it's just expanding and saying to the rest of the college football world, the non-Power 5 conference teams, maybe even like a down, you know, when you know the Pac-12 has been down. They're not always down, but the Pac-12 has been down recently. Here's your chance. Big 12 one year didn't have a team in it. Here's your chance. You'll get in. I think that's the case. Look, we do this thing all the time when we have a really crappy NFL team. Just a crap. We say, Alabama could be. They can't. They can't. It's fun, but they can't. They can't beat an NFL team, right? But we see these teams like Alabama or Clemson, and we just go, they're magnificent. They're perfect in every way because you're judging them by their competition. You're not judging them by NFL competition. That's why the argument is stupid. It's just a stupid, fun sports talking point. But in the NFL, when you have expanded playoffs, you can get a Buccaneers team led by Tom Brady from a wild card standpoint win the Super Bowl. Because the difference between a really bad NFL team, a team that is 1-15, and a team that is 15-1 is very slim. It's very slim. It's usually coaching and maybe a matchup or two. But everybody on both of those teams are the best players on the planet. And we see them shuffle teams all the time, right? We see them be, you know, on a crappy Detroit Lions team, but then go to win a Super Bowl with the Kansas City Chiefs. Happens all the time. In college football, it's not like that. Alabama may send 5 guys, 10 guys in the first round of the NFL draft, and they may beat up a team that will send 3 kids to the NFL draft in 7 rounds. The talent level isn't the same. There are not 12 teams capable of winning the college football national championship. There just isn't. There isn't. Going into this season, there's 3. It's probably, by the time you're done with October, you'll probably narrow it down to 2, right? There just isn't. But what is lacking is an opportunity to at least try. Upsets are very rare in college football from a really low-end team beating a high team. It happens, but it doesn't happen as much like in college basketball. One game setting in college basketball where you're hitting your threes and the other team is cold can lead to an absolutely nowhere school upsetting a top team. We've seen Duke being ousted by teams people can't find on a map. It's not going to happen in college football, right? It's not. I would venture to guess Alabama for the rest of my life, if I live to a nice ripe old age of 90, Alabama is, if they keep the machine rolling along post Saban, is never going to lose to a non-Power 5 school in this postseason, ever. Ever. And even though it took us a long time to get a 16 against a 1 in college basketball to have the upset, we've seen it close. We've seen it close enough, and we've seen a bunch of 15s upset 2s. But it isn't about that. It isn't about getting UCF an opportunity to play for the national championship, and they can. It's just opening the door for the possibility that maybe the sun shines. Maybe one day out of nowhere you do end up finding your way through Alabama, USC, Ohio State, and then play Clemson for the national title. Maybe that's actually going to happen. Opportunity is there.